And welcome back. Eric Greitens' name has become a familiar one, that is, in the St. Louis area. The Missouri-born, heavily decorated former Navy SEAL has a list of impressive credits: combat veteran, humanitarian, Rhodes Scholar, and PhD. And he is an author as well as the founder of The Mission Continues, an organization that helps veterans adjust to civilian life. Greitens has done just that one-on-one with a veteran friend whose post-military adjustment was difficult. The story is told in Eric's new book, Resilience: Hard-Won Wisdom for Living a Better Life. Eric Greitens joins me in studio. Eric, nice to see you again.
Don, great to see you. Thanks for having me on.
Before we talk about the book, and
yes,
we will, I have to ask you what a lot of people are talking
sure
about, and that is the prospect of a political future for Eric Greitens.
Yes, Don, we have set up an exploratory committee, and I'm actively considering looking at running for governor in 2016.
All righty. Well, any kind of a timetable for making that decision?
No, what we're doing right now is we're approaching this the same way I've approached everything in my lifetime, with a lot of humility, recognizing that there's a lot to learn. And we're sitting down with people and we're visiting farms and businesses and schools and really putting my hands around things to understand issues that are out there, so that we can figure out how you'd actually lead in such a way that you could take responsibility for delivering real results for people.
So this would not be such a departure from you, given your background, your past, in your resume?
No, I mean, this is what I've been doing my whole life. I mean, it's been a life dedicated to service. And I found when I was working in refugee camps in Bosnia with families who'd lost their homes, when I was working in Rwanda with kids who'd been abandoned and abused, going through the SEAL teams, working with veterans who'd come home, all of these were really tough issues. They were tough problems, but I found that if you sat down with people, you brought people together, you talked about a common purpose, that you could actually make a real difference in people's lives and you could move things forward.
If you were to run, it would be on the Republican ticket,
That's
I understand.
That's correct, Don, yes.
Well, that situation has changed somewhat due to the untimely and unfortunate death of Tom Schweik.
Yes.
How do you look at that? I mean, I hate to put it this way, and I'll be criticized for it, but this really is an opportunity for you in a sense.
Well, it was obviously an incredibly tragic event. And I think that in situations like this, there are two really important things that we have to do. First is you want to find a way to honor the legacy of the person who's passed. And we had a really dedicated public servant in Tom Schweik. Mm-hmm. I think the second thing that you want to do is figure out how you support the living. And that means not only supporting his family, it also means, and I would say, you know, based on working with veterans the last 7 years, if there's anybody out there who's in a tough spot where they're thinking about making a decision like this, you pause, you take a moment, you call a friend. There are lots of hotlines or people who are out there to support you. And I think we should use a moment like this to support people who are in a tough spot.
I'm guessing you would like to have sat down with Tom Schweik and had a conversation with him based on the kinds of things you're talking about in your book.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a book about resilience. It's a book about how you can actually move through hardship and become better. Because what we all know, Don, is like everybody has to deal with pain. Everybody has to deal with fear. Everybody has to deal with suffering. But if you find a way to build the virtue of resilience, there's a way through pain to actually building wisdom. We all know people in our own lives where we've confronted fear and it's made us more courageous. We've moved through suffering and actually become stronger. So this is a book. It's a series of letters to my friend about how you actually do this in your life.
The friend is Zach Walker?
Yes.
Tell us about Zach Walker.
Yeah, so Zach Walker, tough kid from a Northern California logging family and was with me in BUDS, the Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Team Training, goes off to Afghanistan, does a deployment, is welcomed home as a war hero, buys a concrete pumper, starts a small business, everything's going well. And then what happened, Don, is his life was just hammered by hardship. His brother died. He lost his business, and one day he pulled his truck into his driveway. He got out of his truck, dropped to the ground because he thought there was a sniper watching him. He laid there for hours, then got up, ran into the house, realized he had post-traumatic stress disorder, and then Zach started drinking. Zach did nothing in moderation, so it was not a six-pack but a cooler full of beer on the weekend. And he called me. I was driving down Highway 70 coming back to St. Louis. He called me after he'd been arrested. So this is now my friend who I love and I had served with and we'd done all of these things together, who'd gone from the Navy SEAL war hero, entrepreneur, good father, who's now an unemployed alcoholic on disability, who's looking at the prospect of having his kids come visit him in jail. We talked that night. I got home, and when I got home, I started writing him a letter. He wrote back to me, and the book is a series of letters to my friend about, again, how do you actually build resilience in your life?
How were those letters received by Zach? I mean, you have a lot of advice, a lot of very personal stuff.
Yes.
How did he take them?
Well, he loved it. I mean, this is the thing about Zach. He's one of these guys who was really smart, really capable, didn't necessarily do well in school, had a high school education coming out of Northern California, but he was really smart. And he had this innate desire for culture. Now, what's interesting is in our world, when we think about culture, culture is a word that actually used to come from farming. The idea was that you would cultivate the land. And then the idea grew up that you could actually culture yourself, that there were things that you could read and study that would actually make you wiser. And I remember when we were in Buds, I actually gave him a copy of Ralph Waldo Emerson's essays. And he loved that. So now in the book, we look back to a lot of ancient wisdom. This is wisdom, some of it 2,000 years old from the Stoics, wisdom from the founding fathers, about how you actually confront pain. And Zach ate this up, used it in his own life, and he's in a much better place now.
Well, I was glad to hear that. Yes. What about yourself? You've had your own demons in your young lifetime.
Yeah.
How did you deal with it?
In all of our lives, we have to deal with hardship. I mean, one of the things that I talk about in the book is one of my hardest moments came when I was divorced. I was in Bud's training. I was in the basic underwater demolition SEAL training. And I came home one day to a completely empty apartment. Now, I'd done a lot of humanitarian work before. Again, worked with kids in Cambodia who'd lost limbs to landmines, kids who were survivors of polio. I worked in orphanages in Albania. And I think I'd always had an empathetic sense. I was always, sympathetic to people. But I still, in many ways, when I was young, I thought of our struggles as man against the world. But I realized then when you are lying in bed and the sun is out and you can't and you're not tired – and you can't get out of bed, that some of our most important battles are man against self, that we have to figure out how we master ourselves even when things are really hard, really difficult. That was just one personal moment. I mean, there's been other things. I'm a boxer, and I've lost fights before, tough things in SEAL team training. You have to deal with injury and hardship. You lose loved ones as you go through your life. But there is a way for us to deal with this and become better if we build resilience.
Why do you think it is, Eric Reitens, that Zach Walker – and that's a nom de guerre, I guess, that Zach came back in the kind of shape that he was in. And you didn't. I mean, you shared experiences from day one, apparently.
Yes. No, we had shared a lot of experiences as we went through the Navy SEAL training. And, it's very difficult to know how people are going to react to different hardships in their lives. And one of the key concepts that we talk about in the book is the idea of uneven courage. And the idea is that everyone has a kind of courage in their life, but we all have uneven courage. And working with veterans who've come home, you recognize that these are men and women of incredible physical courage. I mean, they would put on a body armor, check their radio, load their rifle, drive into the streets of a place like Fallujah Iraq, kick down doors behind which they're al-Qaeda terrorists. And yet some of them, when they come home, Don, and they've been burned, right, they were afraid to go to the mall because they're afraid of what kids might say. So we all have uneven courage in our lives, and we all have to find ways to build that courage to face the fears that we have to face in our lives. And I'm just glad that I was able to be a good friend for Zach because he was a fantastic friend for me.
Just as you're sitting here talking, I'm thinking of American Sniper.
Yes.
It's probably a film you probably have seen, I would think. And it kind of lays this out in a fairly interesting way, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, so you may know I've got an 8-month-old at home. So I haven't seen a lot of movies over the course of the last 8 months. But I did go out for Valentine's Day. Sheena and I went out and we saw American Sniper. First of all, I would say it's an incredibly well-done movie. I mean, the depictions of what it was actually like in Iraq were exceptionally well done. They had fantastic advisors on the film. I also think they did a very good job of paying attention to the reality that there are some tensions when veterans come home. And you don't step from a war zone right back into your house and immediately step right back into your last life. You know, people have to deal with this hardship as they come home.
You know, I'm interested, Eric, in you mentioned it a moment ago, how you drew upon the, quote, ancients for some of the advice that you passed along to your friend Zach Walker. Give us an example or two of the kinds of things you drew from the millennia past.
Yeah. So what's really interesting is that when you look back 2,000 years, life was much harder then. So there's actually, I quote Marcus Aurelius, who says that when you kiss your kids goodnight, you should always remember to say they might not be here in the morning because that was their reality. If you had a kid who was less than 5 years old, there was a good chance that they might not be there in the morning. So what the Stoics did was they built this practice called the premeditation of evils. And what they recognized was that people are going to worry. You're going to worry about things that might go wrong. In our culture, what we often do is we tell people, don't worry, it's going to be okay. And the Stoics said, that's really unhelpful advice because you're going to worry. And then what happens is you just feel bad about worrying. What the Stoics said is what you do is you purposefully think about things that might go wrong. And then what you do is you think about how you'd react to them. Seneca said that people who are ambushed by hardship are often overcome by it. But if we've thought ahead of time about how we're going to meet it, we do much better. And this is a mental toughness technique they actually teach in the SEAL teams called mental rehearsal, where you actually think through what's going to happen if I turn around at 50 meters and I feel like I'm out of air and I'm underwater. What's going to happen if we're hit by a suicide truck bomb? So you take a lot of this ancient wisdom from the Stoics and you can apply it not just to SEAL team training or Olympic athletes or elite performers, but you can apply it to your own life so that you can actually build resilience.
You know, again, as I listen to you and think in terms of dealing with the greatest hardships that life could face, whether it was the ancients or the veterans from, what about the rest of us, the day-to-day lives we live? We there are obstacles, but nothing like the kinds of things that you're really talking about with Zach and yourself and historic times.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is that, like we talk about in the book, I say to Zach, everybody has a front line in their life. Everybody has a place in their life where they deal with fear, where they're dealing with difficulty, where they're dealing with hardship. And if they think about their own lives, the lives of their families, people who they work with in their community, they see that everybody has this place where they struggle. And what's interesting is that a lot of times in our culture, we want to run away from that struggle. We want to run away from those things that are hard. But what a lot of the ancients said is that you have to actually embrace those hard times because those are your opportunities for greatest growth. And if you embrace them in the right way, then actually those moments of hardship can be opportunities for growth. Those are places where you build friendship. Those are places where you can actually shape your character in the most profound ways. And this is, you know, average stuff, Don. This is when people lose jobs. This is when people retire and they start this next phase of their life. This happens when people lose loved ones. It happens when people are worried about their kids leaving and going off to college. We all have to deal with this in our lives.
How do you define resilience?
So resilience is the virtue that helps you to get better when things are hard. That's what resilience is. It's the virtue that helps you to get better when things are hard.
I have a note here that we had Starsky Wilson, who was the co-chair of the Ferguson Commission on our program. Yeah. And when they issued their report after their first 100 days, his line was, he calls for resilience, as he presented this report, resilience in the community. Yes. So it doesn't have to be an individual thing. I mean, can we realistically talk about group resilience?
Yes, you can. And if you want to think about how you build group resilience, there are a couple of things that are critical. This is true for both individuals and communities. If you want to measure someone's resilience, one of the things we talk about in the book is this: the simplest question you can ask them is you say, what are you responsible for? The more responsibility people take for what's happening in their own lives, the more resilient they're going to be. Resilient communities need resilient citizens, resilient families. We also have to have resilient leaders. We have to have leaders who are willing to say, I am responsible for what's happening here. I will be responsible for these results. You know, in the military, we have this concept. It's called the change of command. And when you take over as captain of a new ship, you are immediately responsible for everything that happens on that ship. And that virtue of responsibility is something that we need to have in our leaders and in our communities. And if I were going to say, if there was a second thing that you want to look at, it's that resilient people figure out a way to take action. Commissions are wonderful, reports can be important, but resilient people take action. And so what you have to do is figure out, how do we take this energy? Everybody's paying attention now to what's happening. And how do we take this energy and create opportunities to build new relationships, to tutor kids? We've got a lot of isolated kids in Ferguson. How do we connect them to jobs, to community centers, to places where they really belong? And what you find is there's a difference between going somewhere and belonging. You know, people can go to a lot of places. If you belong somewhere, it means not only do you go and get something, but it means you go and you're expected to give something. You're contributing.
Well, what would your advice be? You're a gentleman now who is thinking about entering the political world.
Yes.
This is certainly going to be around for a while if you do decide to run. What's your advice for a community like that?
So one of the things that we can all do is ask ourselves, how can I contribute? How can I make a difference? When you think about communities that are in Ferguson, for example, as I said, we've got lots of kids who would love to have tutors and coaches and mentors in their lives. And there are a lot of people around the whole St. Louis area who could play a role in that. One of the things that I also did when I came back from Iraq, I actually worked with police departments to actually help them build some community policing efforts. One of the things that we did in Baltimore was we actually set up ropes courses. We had police officers go out with kids who were in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And at the beginning, one of the things that was amazing, that in the beginning, tremendous amount of fear. Mm-hmm. Tremendous amount of suspicion. By the end of the ropes course, you could see these kids hanging on the police officers in a really wonderful way. And again, that doesn't come through words. It doesn't come through discussion. It comes through people being willing to say, I'm going to create action. I'm going to bring people together. The final thing I'd say about this is that too often what happens in discussion is that you have people who are looking at each other. Mm-hmm. One of the things we always did at the Mission Continues, when we wanted to bring civilians and veterans together, we wouldn't just have discussions, we'd have them serve together. And we went out and we built new baseball fields and we did school rehabilitation projects and church rehabilitation projects. And when you're serving right next to somebody and you're serving next to a veteran and you're painting and you're cleaning and you're building together, you build a relationship that you wouldn't build through discussion alone. So let's find ways, there's so much action that we can take. Let's find ways in the community to go out, start serving together. And through that, you build a stronger community.
You know, one of the things I've noticed here and elsewhere post-Ferguson is the fact that some of the police officers, as you indicated in the first part of your last comments, they're going out and they're starting to shoot hoops with these kids in the playgrounds. And it seems to be paying off. It's too early to totally evaluate it, but that's exactly what you're talking about, isn't it?
Those things pay off tremendously. Yeah. And it's also important, just like, you know, I say when veterans come home, it's not only important for civilians to understand veterans, it's important for veterans to understand civilians and to make themselves understood. It's both important for police officers to go out and to do that kind of work. At the same time, I would highly recommend to everybody, I wish every American could spend one night driving around with a police officer in a dangerous neighborhood. I've done this myself many times. And when you go out and you do that, it gives you a tremendous appreciation that these men and women, they kiss their families goodbye every night. And they're going out to do some of the most dangerous work, and they're doing it on all of our behalfs. They're tremendous public servants.
I did some police training work in a previous lifetime, if you will. And I was impressed day after day working with these men and women that the last thing they thought about when they walked out the door every morning is, will I come home tonight?
Will I come home? That's exactly right. And people need to appreciate that because police officers do a tremendous service to our community every single day.
Back to the book and the time that we have left. Eric Greitens, the book is Resilience, by the way. I think I've mentioned that. Hard-Won Wisdom for Living a Better Life. Back to Zach Walker, the friend to whom you wrote these 37 letters, I think it was a total one. What do you think was the best advice you gave him?
So what was really interesting for Zach was that each letter hit him at different places in his life. So, you know, one of the things that was most important to him in the beginning was the letter about responsibility. And I draw this in the letter. We talk about how excuses take hold. And I said to him, I said, Zach, you're in this tough place because people want to offer you excuses. And you want to say, well, because you have post-traumatic stress disorder, you don't have to show up to work on time, or you don't need to work, or because you lost friends overseas, we're not expecting you to contribute. And I said, that comes from a kind place, but it can be kind poison. And the thing about excuses is that they actually prevent you from living a really full life. And the analogy I made for Zach is I say, you put an excuse on at first because it protects you. And it's like a shield of armor, protects you from a little bit of pain. And then you put on another excuse. And what happens is over time is that these excuses actually prevent you from really living a full life. So the first thing that I think really connected to him was the responsibility piece. And the second thing was, this was a guy who had always served something larger than himself. And he came home and I said to him, Zach, you have to continue serving. And what's really cool, I just talked to him last night. What's really cool is that now he's out coaching again. Coached football in the fall. He's coaching baseball today. And he tells me that when I'm out coaching, I feel like I'm serving a purpose again and I'm getting stronger.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn about yourself in writing this book?
So this was one of the great things about writing the book, was that you actually start to learn how much I appreciated so many teachers and mentors who I've had in my own life. I mean, one of the things that's fun about the book launch tonight is I know my second grade teacher is going to be there. We invited my kindergarten teacher, my first bosses, my boxing coaches. All of us learn so much as we go through life, and we have to find ways to pass that on and to model and mentor that for others.
Yeah. Well, Eric Reitens, you mentioned that you're launching tonight, and that's going to be at the St. Louis Public Library, and Left Rank Books will be presenting Eric Reitens at 7 o'clock tonight at the St. Louis Public Library Central Library downtown at the auditorium. And I see here that you've got another one scheduled for the County Library on April 29th. It's quite a gap in between. I hope you have some other signings in between, Eric.
Absolutely.
Reitens. But folks, you can find more information about these events involving Eric Reitens on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Thank you so much for being with us, Eric, and good luck with the book. Again, I'll mention it once again, Resilience, Hard-Won Wisdom for Living a Better Life. Good luck with it. Maybe it'll be your second bestseller, right?
Thank you.
First one titled The Heart and the Fist. Yes. We talked about that the last time around. Thank you so much for being with
us.
You're
welcome, sir.
I would like to also advise our audience that we are pleased to announce that NPR's Michelle Martin is returning to St. Louis. On Monday, March 23rd, she will host Ferguson and Beyond, continuing the community conversation. It's a follow-up to our town hall meeting that she moderated in August, just after the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson. For more information, visit our website at stlpublicradio.org/STL on air. Michelle Martin back with us on Monday, March 23rd. Eric Reitens, I want to thank you so much once again. We have a couple of extra seconds. I think I misread the clock there. We'll point out again that you're at the City Library tonight, downtown headquarters. Have you been in that building yet?
Oh, it's beautiful. They've done an absolutely fantastic job. It's a jewel.
Yeah, yes. It really is. Yeah. Well, you'll have fun there tonight. I'm going to get out a little bit early, folks, but tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll get two takes on the situation in Ferguson following the release of the Department of Justice report. First from NPR's Michelle Martin. She'll be here next week, but she'll be with us tomorrow at noon. And then we'll also hear from St. Louis Alderman Antonio French. He was such a big part of the Ferguson story, particularly during the early days following the death of Michael Brown. And, of course, he's been heavily involved since. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/STL on air. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.